Good morning, everybody. It's time to get a move on here. Sorry for getting started late. We are in Joshua chapter 16 and aiming to do chapter 16 and 17 today because they are of a piece with each other. Let's start, though, by filling in our map real quick. And we'll fill in a little more of this over the course of today. But let's start with the tribes that we know. All right, we've been over four tribes so far, three on the east side of the Jordan and one on the west side. Maybe we should start with the easy one, the one on the west side of the Jordan that we've been over already. Who can tell me where the tribe of Judah is on this map? All right. Yes, this big space right here. Here's Judah. All right, so now we'll jump the river and take on ones that may not be stuck in our heads yet. We've got three tribes, or technically two and a half tribes, right? Three tribal allotments given to two and a half tribes. First off, who are the two and a half tribes east of the Jordan? All right, I heard Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben. All right, so Reuben, Gad, half-tribe of Manasseh. All right, let's start, because Joshua, in describing the land, the book of Joshua, in describing the land, typically works from south to north. In fact, we're even seeing it on the west side. We start in the south with Judah, and today we're going to move into the north. But it might help us to remember things in that south to north order, because Joshua names the tribes in that south to north order. So who's the southernmost tribe east of the Jordan? It's Reuben.
He was the oldest son of the tribe?
Yes.
Well, I think last week you were reflecting on the fact that the oldest son usually gets the first choice.
Yes, he usually gets the first lot. He gets a double portion also. And Reuben and Simeon and Levi all essentially get passed over because of things that they did, that their forefathers did. And Judah is the one that more or less gets the double portion here. That language of double inheritance is not brought out explicitly in the book of Joshua, but it is something that's developed over the course of Israel's history. And it is stated more or less explicitly in Genesis. Yes. Yeah, because, yeah, so God lays out, you know, the promised land is supposed to be everything here west of the Jordan. And in the course of bringing Israel here, he blesses Israel by expanding the promised land to include this land east of the Jordan. And yeah, Reuben makes it. You know, all of the tribes make it, despite, you know, some of their some of the troubles that their patriarchs had and some of the troubles that they themselves had. So the, you know, obviously that first generation doesn't make it. They all of them die in the wilderness except for Caleb and Joshua, but their children make it. All right, so Reuben in the south, who is just to the north of Reuben? You got a 50-50 shot here. Is it Gad or East Manasseh? It's Gad. And East Manasseh, Eman, goes on the far north side. Manasseh gets a pretty big portion himself. And we haven't seen West Manasseh yet, but we're about to. So let's go ahead and jump into our text, Joshua chapter 16. We'll read the first three verses. Oh, yes, ma'am. So it's not presented as impatience. It's that they had already engaged in some warfare east of the Jordan against King Sihon of the Ammonites and King Og of Bashan. And they defeated them, and they got to looking around, and saw that the land looked good. And so they asked Moses, well, hey, can we have our inheritance here? And so the arrangement that is struck is that, yes, you can have this land east of the Jordan, but you have to send your fighting men west of the Jordan to help your brothers conquer their lots in the land. And so that's what they do. They set up their families and their livestock east of the Jordan, and then they join the rest of Israel in crossing the river and beginning their attack on Jericho, which would have been down around here in this area. So, good question. All right, Joshua 16, first three verses. The allotment of the people of Joseph went from the Jordan by Jericho, east of the waters of Jericho, into the wilderness, going up from Jericho into the hill country to Bethel. Then going from Bethel to Luz, it passes along to Atarot, the territory of the Archites. Then it goes down westward to the territory of the Laphatites, as far as the territory of Lower Beth-Horon, then to Gezer, and it ends at the sea. All right. Chapter 16 is shifting our attention to the sons of Joseph. The ESV, by the way, you've noticed this. The ESV has the tendency to use the word people, like the people of Israel, or here, the people of Joseph. That's almost always translating the word sons. And the ESV is, it's using this word people properly, because if you were talking in Hebrew about the sons of Joseph, right, you just know that means the people of Joseph, the tribe of Joseph. But in our English translation, we kind of miss out on that play on the word sons, because we're not just talking about the people of Joseph, because, what's the tribe of Joseph, right? We never talk about the tribe of Joseph in Israel. And why is that, by the way? Why do we never talk about the tribe of Joseph? Give you a hint, it has something to do with the word sons. Yes, because his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, take his place in the tribal list. You'll remember that at the end of the book of Genesis, Joseph receives some special honor from his father Jacob. I doubt that we've got time to go hunt these texts down in this class period. If you want some more details, go to Genesis chapter 48, and you'll see this play out, where Joseph brings his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, before Jacob to receive a blessing. And the honor that Joseph receives is that his sons receive an inheritance as though they were Jacob's own sons. In fact, part of what we see play out, and we went over this when we were going through that part of Genesis, however long ago that was. Part of what we see play out is more or less an adoption ceremony. Right? Jacob claims Ephraim and Manasseh as his own sons. And so each of them receives an inheritance. And so we see a special blessing for Joseph. Right? It's really explicit, even to our minds, that Joseph, out of all the sons of Jacob, explicitly receives a double inheritance from his father, because the one inheritance that he would have received is now split into two, given to his sons Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, we're used to treating them separately. Here the text begins to treat them as one tribe. There's a reason the text does that, but we'll have to hold on to that idea, because we don't get the payoff for that. We don't get to see why that is until later in our reading. So just remember that the text is treating, at least for a little while, is treating Ephraim and Manasseh as one people, the sons of Joseph. And it does that beginning by treating this as a single lot. Right? We have a land inheritance that is given, but what we just read was a description of the land's southern border, that reaches from the Jordan River on the one side to the sea on the other side. And remember, this this map is not exactly accurate. It's hand-drawn. I think some of these border lines could be messed with a little bit. But in general, what we're looking at here is the southern border line for the tribe of Joseph. But then almost immediately, the text shows us, splits us, into two different people groups. Verse 4, the people of Joseph, that is the sons of Joseph, Manasseh and Ephraim, received their inheritance. Let's go ahead and put Ephraim and West Manasseh on the map. And we'll see something that the text is doing. All right, so we've already got Eastern Manasseh, Western Manasseh. I've tried to make this part easy by using the same color. Western Manasseh is this other big red blotch west of the Jordan. And Ephraim is this central territory. Right, just right in the middle of Israel. Although from Israel's perspective, they were in northern Israel. Right, they refer to this as northern Israel. And so what we see going on is that the text has again moved from south to north. And you'll notice that it has, at least geologically, skipped over a couple of tribes. There are a couple of tribal allotments here next to Judah that we have not heard about yet. We'll hear about them soon. But instead, the text is passing them over to focus on Joseph. So why do that? You know, why skip? And why focus on Western Manasseh and Ephraim at this point? There's a couple of possible explanations for that. First off, perhaps because what we will see later on in Israel's history is that these two tribes, especially the tribe of Ephraim, become the dominant political force in northern Israel. In fact, whenever the kingdom splits into north and south, first off, we always refer to the southern kingdom as Judah. It doesn't just include Judah. Most of the southern kingdom is made up of Judah. It includes some other territory as well, though. The northern kingdom, the rest of Israel, is ruled from the city of Samaria, which happens to be in Ephraim. Right? Ephraim is the seat of government for the northern kingdom of Israel. And even at this point, we're going to see this, I think once we get to chapter 18, there is already, even at this point in Israel's history, an explicit north-south division in Israel. It's not something that we have to wait around for the divided kingdom to see. Like, there's a reason why whenever Israel split, it split the way that it did. Israel already thought of itself in terms of north and south. So, and again, that will become more explicit as we go along. Any questions or comments up to this point? All right, let's cover some more of our text. Verse 5. The territory of the people of Ephraim by their clans was as follows. The boundary of their inheritance on the east was Atarot Adar, as far as Upper Bet Horon, and the boundary goes from there to the sea. On the north is Mikmetat, then on the east the boundary turns around towards Tanat Shiloh and passes along it, along beyond it on the east to Yanoah. And then it goes down from Yanoah to Atarot and to Na'arah and touches Jericho, ending at the Jordan. From Tapua the boundary goes westward to the brook Kana and ends at the sea. Such is the inheritance of the tribe of the people of Ephraim by their clans, together with the towns that were set apart for the people of Ephraim within the inheritance of the Manassites, all those towns with their villages. However, they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites have lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, but have been made to do forced labor. All right. First off, we should notice here that the this description of their territory is a whole lot shorter than the description that we just read of Judah last week. Right, like the description of Judah's territory is like 63 verses. And this one, it's done in like 10. But what's the one thing that stands out to you guys about what we just read about Ephraim? I mean, I know it's not any of the place names. They did not get rid of the Canaanites. Right? There's a reason why the author of Joshua ends with that detail, by the way. Right? That's supposed to be the takeaway of this text. He describes Ephraim's boundaries to us, their territory to us. But the one thing that we really need to remember is that they do not take all of the territory that they're supposed to have. They don't drive out the Canaanites who live among them, which is kind of a big deal because that's been like the whole point of the book up to this point, right? I mean, what is the Lord's commandment for how they are supposed to treat the people of the land going in? Yeah, they're supposed to wipe them out entirely. We have seen two major exceptions to that so far in the book. People who formed covenants with Israel and more or less became Israelite. We saw Rahab and we saw the Gibeonites. Right? Rahab becomes Israelite almost immediately. The Gibeonites, we traced the progression of that where by the end of their history they are counted among the Israelites, even though there's a distinction at this point in their history. But you have those two exceptions. Everybody else is supposed to die, supposed to be put to the sword. And how good has Israel been at that up to this point in the book? They've been really consistent about it. In fact, with the people part of it, they've been entirely consistent, at least through the conquest part of the book. Right? It going through like chapter 12. Everybody that they were supposed to kill, the text says they killed. They put all of these kings to death. They put all these armies to death. They put all the people in these cities to death. At least that's what we've been told up to this point. And in fact, the one major failure over the course of their entire conquest, of course, who was responsible for it? Who was the one major failure over the course of the entire conquest? I mean, you can pin it on Joshua ultimately, but the sin that we read about is the sin of Achan, right, in chapter 7. And what is it that he keeps? It's not people, it's stuff. It is some silver and a really nice cloak from Shinar. And that's the stuff that he doesn't put under the ban, and that's the place where Israel sins. Up to this point, they've been really consistent at killing everybody. But now, all of a sudden, we have read twice now of tribes failing to drive out all of the people of the land. I don't think that we really focused on this last week, but go back to the last verse of chapter 15, verse 63. But the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the people of Judah could not drive out. So the Jebusites dwell with the people of Judah at Jerusalem to this day. So by the time that the book of Joshua was composed, Jerusalem was still not an Israelite city. All right, think about that for a second, because when you think Jerusalem, right, you think that's like the Israelite city. And yet, for a big chunk of their history, Israel does not control Jerusalem. I don't remember if we said this last week, but do y'all remember roughly what time period Israel finally conquers Jerusalem? Sorry? David. Under King David, that they finally take Jerusalem, which is why a big part of the city is known as the City of David, because the Jebusites stay in the midst of Israel for generations. So we've read it with Judah, and now we are reading it with Ephraim. on the north side of the divide. We have so far looked at the tribal boundaries of two western tribes. We've not looked at Manasseh yet. Two western tribes. Both of them have failed to drive out the inhabitants of the land before them. Israel is 0 for 2 at this point. And this, by the way, this fills us in on a thread that we have had hanging out for the last, like, six chapters. If you go back to chapter 10, we've heard the name Gezer before. If you go back to Joshua chapter 10, verse 33. So this is part of Joshua's southern campaign. Remember, there's this coalition of five southern kings who band together to try to defeat Israel, and Joshua just completely wipes them out. And then he goes on campaign, and we read all of these descriptions of Joshua killing the kings of these cities and defeating their armies, and then finally also taking the cities themselves, except with Gezer in verse 33. Then Horam, king of Gezer, came up to help Lachish. All right, so they're not fighting in Gezer. The army of Gezer goes to Lachish, and Joshua struck him and his people until he left none remaining. All right, so Joshua defeats the king of Gezer, kills him along with his army, but we do not read anything from that point forward about any conquest of the city of Gezer. We pointed this out back when we were reading the chapter, that this is a loose thread that's hanging out, and now we've come around back around to it. If it is part of the tribal allotment for Ephraim, and Ephraim fails to conquer the city of Gezer the way that they were supposed to. So the Canaanites have lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, although they have been made to do forced labor. All right, so any questions or comments about that so far? Let's see, we should point out a couple of other things. And also, while we've noted this, that Israel is 0 for 2 in driving out the inhabitants of the land, we've seen it repeated. Let's see if it becomes a pattern, right? Trick question, who wants to place bets, right? We don't because we're Christians, but you know what I mean. All right, let's point out a couple of other things. Notice that Ephraim is dealt with first, even though, I'm asking you to dig way back in memory, between Ephraim and Manasseh, which one is the firstborn of Joseph? I'll give you a hint, it's not Ephraim. Manasseh is the firstborn. And you would expect Manasseh to appear first and to receive kind of the preeminence. But Ephraim ends up with the preeminence. Again, Ephraim is going to be the seat of government in the northern part of Israel later on. And his territory is given to him first on the west side of the Jordan. Kind of, huh? Yeah, yeah. Now, kind of a deep cut here, but can y'all think of why Ephraim is shown the preeminence over Manasseh? Y'all remember anything that happens? Yes, that's exactly it. So you remember that Joseph brings Manasseh and Ephraim to his father Jacob to receive the blessing, and Jacob puts his right hand on Ephraim's head and his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Joseph has brought them, you know, in the right order to make sure the right son gets the right hand. And, because Jacob is blind by this point. But then Jacob pulls the old switcheroo on him. And Joseph tries to correct him and say, no, quit crossing your arms, Dad. do it like this. And Jacob says, no, I mean to do it to do this. And he pronounces a greater blessing on Ephraim, foretelling that he is going to be the preeminent son. And he ultimately is. Off the top of my head, I don't remember if Jacob gives a reason. It's in Genesis 48, though, if you want to hunt that down. All right, so that is why Ephraim is given the preeminence. All right, let's continue into chapter 17. We can cover Manasseh pretty quickly. Then allotment was made to the people of Manasseh, for he was the firstborn of Joseph. To Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, were allotted Gilead and Bashan, because he was a man of war. And allotments were made to the rest of the people of Manasseh by their clans: Abiezer, Helek, Azrael, Shechem, Epher, and Shemida. These were the male descendants of Manasseh, the son of Joseph, by their clans. All right, we need to notice here that the text begins by reminding us of the inheritance on the east side of the Jordan. Right, to Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh, the father of Gilead, were allotted Gilead and Bashan. We're talking about this territory over here. Gilead was down here, because part of it goes to Gad as well, and Bashan was up here. So we're reminded of that, and this territory goes to the clan of Machir, the firstborn of Manasseh. Well, I say firstborn. He's the only son of Manasseh, as far as we are made aware of in Scripture. And then the text tells us that on the west side of the river, we are going to see allotments made to the other clans of Manasseh. Abiezer, Helek, Azrael, Shechem, Hefer, and Shemida. So you've got one clan, technically two, because Gilead acts as a separate clan from Machir on the east side. You've got a couple of clans on the east side, and now on the west side, we've got six clans that are going to be receiving tribal allotments. But it's going to get a little more dicey than that. Right, if that already looks imbalanced, where you've got two on the one side and six on the other side, the text is about to throw us for a loop. Verse 3. Now Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh, had no sons, but only daughters. All right, do you remember this guy? We've read about this guy a couple of times by this point. These are the names of his daughters: Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. All right, so if you're struggling for girl names, there you go. They approached Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun and the leaders and said, The Lord commanded Moses to give us an inheritance along with our brothers. So according to the mouth of the Lord, he gave them an inheritance among the brothers of their father. Thus there fell to Manasseh 10 portions besides the land of Gilead and Bashan, which is on the other side of the Jordan, because the daughters of Manasseh received an inheritance along with his sons. The land of Gilead was allotted to the rest of the people of Manasseh. All right. Let's see here. So this is a story that we have heard before. We don't have time to chase this down. If you're unfamiliar with the story, it happens in two parts. In Numbers chapter 27, okay, let me go ahead and write some important texts for you guys to hunt down. We've got Genesis 48. This is where we find the blessing given to Manasseh and Ephraim. Then there's Numbers chapters 27 and 36. Those are the two chapters where we find the story of the daughters of Zelophehad. And the short of it is that Zelophehad dies, and he has no sons, only these daughters, and the daughters come to Moses and say, we don't want our father's name to disappear from the earth, so give us an inheritance, since our father had no sons. And so the Lord comes to Moses and says, the daughters of Zelophehad are right. Give them their inheritance. In fact, the Lord normalizes this practice in statute in Numbers chapter 27. Anytime a man dies and has no sons, you give his inheritance to his daughters. If he has no daughters, give them to his brother. If he has no brothers, give them to his uncle, etc., etc., to keep things within the clan and ultimately within the tribe. That concern then gets brought back up again in Numbers 36, where the rest of the tribe of Manasseh says, hey, wait a minute. If any of these women marry outside of the tribe of Manasseh, then their land is going to end up belonging to these other tribes, and we're going to lose our inheritance. And so the Lord comes to Moses again and says, the sons of Manasseh are right. Anytime that you have a daughter who receives an inheritance, she has to marry within the tribe to keep the inheritance within the tribe. And at the end of that whole story, we are told that the daughters of Zelophehad indeed marry they marry husbands from among the rest of the tribe of Manasseh. So, but again, this complicates things on the west side of the river, because now we have gone from 6 portions to 10 portions on the west side of the river for Manasseh. And in the rest of the chapter, is that indeed the rest? Most of the rest of the chapter, the boundary of Manasseh is described. Let's go ahead and read that real quick. And we'll wrap up. Verse 7. The territory of Manasseh reached from Asher to Mikmetat, which is east of Shechem. Then the boundary goes along southward to the inhabitants of En-Tappuah. The land of Tappuah belonged to Manasseh, but the town of Tappuah on the boundary of Manasseh belonged to the people of Ephraim. Then the boundary went down to the brook Kana. These cities to the south of the brook among the cities of Manasseh belonged to Ephraim. Then the boundary of Manasseh goes on the north side of the brook and ends at the sea, the land to the south being Ephraim's and that to the north being Manasseh's, with the sea forming its boundary. On the north, Asher is reached, and on the east, Issachar. Also in Issachar and in Asher, Manasseh had Beth Shean and its villages, and Ablaam and its villages, and the inhabitants of Dor and its villages, and the inhabitants of Endor and its villages, and the inhabitants of Taanach and its villages, and the inhabitants of Megiddo and its villages. The third is Naphat. Yet the people of Manasseh could not take possession of those cities, but the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in that land. Now when the people of Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but did not utterly drive them out. All right, so we're going to end with two observations here. Israel is now 0-3, and now it's officially a pattern. We're going to hear this phrase, but the Canaanites, a lot, over not just the rest of Joshua, but especially the beginning of Judges. But the Canaanites is going to become a big deal in this part of the Bible. Last thing that I want us to look at before we leave is that we're also given the places for two of the other tribes bordering West Manasseh, and we might as well add them to the map. To the north of Manasseh, which tribe do we find? The text just told us. To the north of Manasseh in
Asher.
Yes, Asher. All right, and to the east of Manasseh, which, again, this, well, we're talking about this area here. It's east from a certain perspective in Manasseh. Which tribe do we find there?
Issachar.
All right, so I know you can all remember all that easily. So we'll review this next Sunday. that does it for us today. Let's go ahead and go out and get some fresh air and give the auditorium time to air out for everybody else. Thank you so much for your kind attention and your questions and comments this morning.